Hi, I'm Femi OK. Today on the stream, rebuilding Gaza. After four wars since 2008, is it possible for Gaza ever to be fully rebuilt? That is the question for today's show. Before we start that, though, I want to share with you a collaboration between the data organisation Situ Research and the Associated Press. They took one family and looked at the toll of the conflicts on them on the Gaza Strip. Take a look.
The buildings surrounding this courtyard are home to the extended Nasir family and their neighbors. And on May 14th, Israeli missiles struck at the heart of it. It was one of 1,500 strikes during the 11-day conflict that Israel said it launched against military targets. But Palestinians and human rights groups say many civilian structures were also hit. Each missile strike exacts a toll measured first in deaths and injuries. But the ripple effects can play out for weeks, months, and years. Zaki Nasir's home was damaged by shelling in 2014. He paid to repair it. Now, after the latest strike, it will have to be torn down. In the home next door, Zaki's brother Ali and his family are mourning the loss of their son, Mohammed, who was killed in a separate aerial attack nearby. Another Nasir brother, Jamal, lost his home and also his livelihood after his grocery store was flattened in the May attack. And Kaldia Nasir still mourns the loss of her husband, hit by gunfire while out getting food during what was supposed to be a ceasefire in 2008.
Joining us to talk about the reality of Gaza reconstruction, Omar Wafa Mahmoud. Thank you for making time to be on the stream today. Omar, please tell our audience who you are, what you do.
Thank you, Femi. My name is Omar Shaker. I'm the Israel and Palestine Director at Human Rights Watch, overseeing research and advocacy around human rights abuses across the West Bank, Gaza, and Israel proper.
Thanks for being with us today. Wafa, please introduce yourself to our international audience.
Actually, I'm from Gaza. My name is Wafa Abdirrahman. I'm founder and director of Filastiniyat, a media organization for youth and women that works both in Gaza Strip and West Bank.
If you remember our Gaza shows, then you will remember Mahmoud. For those of our audience who haven't seen you before, Mahmoud, on the stream, please remind them who you are and what you do.
Hi, everybody. My name is Mahmoud Chalabi, and I work as a senior program manager for a UK charity called Medical Aid for Palestinians, and I am based in Gaza. Thank you.
Thank you. Omar, the fact that this is a continual cycle of issues, trying to rebuild Gaza under very difficult circumstances. There's a picture just behind me of a family peering through a hole in their wall. That hole in the wall wasn't made in May. It was made a few days ago. So that reminds us that living in Gaza is a continual challenge in terms of your safety, your security. Will your home be there when you get home? Will you be killed in your bed? Omar, what is the reality of rebuilding Gaza right now?
I think we have to start from the fact that the 2 million people in Gaza live in a situation of apartheid. Gaza makes the headlines, you know, every couple of years or sometimes months when there is a flare-up in hostilities. But people forget that for 14 years, Gaza has been rendered into an open-air prison. 2 million people who have been denied their right to free movement as a result of a generalized travel ban. Nobody in, nobody out, outside of narrow humanitarian exemptions, sweeping restrictions on the movement of people and goods, has created a reality where 80% of the population relies on humanitarian aid, where the majority of families spend the majority of their days without electricity. And you add to that these conflicts, Israeli bombardment that has wiped out entire families, killed civilians, that has destroyed high-rise towers, the homes and businesses for tens of thousands of people, and you see a reality that's quite dark.
Mm-hmm. Wafa, you can't rebuild family members who are no longer with you. You can't rebuild that. But what rebuilding have you seen?
Actually, talking about rebuilding, this is a very complex issue that is not an economic issue. It's not technical. It's not about the rocks and the cement. It's political, economic, humanitarian at the same time. And being the voice of the people, if I want to take this angle, actually, people are not very optimistic. There will be reconstruction in Gaza, having the different agendas, international agendas imposed on Gaza that has been under 15 years of strict Israeli siege, that is deprived from the basic services. Rebuilding also now, the talks of rebuilding Gaza is leaving aside the human beings, the psychological being, the well-being of the people, because it's not only about houses and buildings and towers, it's the people, and no one is actually addressing the issue of those who are still living, how they're handling the situation, how they will continue their life. I think this is a huge issue. In addition, of course, tackling the reconstruction, actually ending the siege, ending the occupation on Gaza, this will continue to be not addressing the roots of this misery and this conflict, and this means the issue will continue. The reconstruction will not be something tangible, touched neither on the short term or even in a longer term.
Well, I am so glad that you mentioned that. Omar, hold tight for a moment. I want to come right back to you, and I also want to bring in Mahmoud as well. But Asma spoke to us a few hours ago, and she talked about rebuilding, but rebuilding people, Wafa. She was challenging you, or you were challenging Asma. I'm going to play Asma's comment, and then Mahmoud, would you respond to it? And then, Omar, you go ahead and come off the back of Mahmoud. Here's Asma, first of all.
Over the past 3 months, we have experienced several nights where Israeli airstrikes were hitting across the Gaza Strip, reliving our experience and feelings of fear, of being terrified for one's life that we have experienced in May and the past aggressions. Addressing these traumas and addressing our daily suffering is a fundamental element of the reconstruction process. But we also need to talk about the livelihood and how it fit in the picture of the reinfrastructure, the reconstruction, particularly how livelihood need a strong infrastructure in place of different sectors like transportation and energy. Yet these sectors are usually the main targets during every aggression.
That's totally true. So you are talking about a blockade that has continued for more than 14 years. How this has affected the people? It's frustrating to see Gaza on the news only when there is, you know, a big war or a big escalation or assault on it. What has been ongoing since 2007, there are daily naval fire incidents, daily border fire incidents, daily incursions near the buffer zone, and all these go unreported by the media. What has this done, you know, for the people in Gaza? We need reconstruction for the people, as Asma said, and it's literal and figurative. Talking about trauma, for example, 53% of the children of Gaza, you know, they have PTSD. But I am against, you know, calling it PTSD. It should be called CTSD, a continuous trauma stress disorder, due to the fact that you are living a protracted emergency in Gaza. Even speaking about limb reconstruction, we have spoken about this during our previous, you know, talk. The limbs of people, due to the assault and the nature of what's happening in Gaza, they get destroyed, and you need to rebuild them from, you need 4 to 6 years to rebuild a simple one limb in order for the patient to survive and prevent a disability. And the list goes on, you know. The most recent statistic from Euromed have indicated that children of Gaza, almost 91% of the children of Gaza, suffer from a trauma-related, you know, disorder.
Yeah.
And it's really frustrating to see Gaza on the news only when there's an assault, as I said. because we need to focus on what's happening, which is the continuous, you know, under the surface, devastating and destruction of people's lives, of the economy, and how this has been affecting their health, you know, their social lives, and the list goes on.
This is why I feel that this show is so important. It's not about headlines about bombardment. It is about the reality of daily life in Gaza. I want you to be part of the program. I don't even need to invite you. On YouTube, you're already having that conversation. The comment section is right here. Please use our guests as a resource. What do you need to know from them? Umar asks, how can someone build his house while he is in prison? Gaza is under blockade almost 10 years, so life in Gaza is terrible and is horrifying. Umar, do you want to pick up on that thought, first of all? And then I know you had some more to add to our conversation.
Yeah, I think Wafa and Mahmoud put it really well. I mean, we can give you a lot of numbers about Gaza. I mean, economists estimate that over the years, the damage exceeds $5.7 trillion, nearly a quarter million homes destroyed. Just in the last conflict, the World Bank estimates the physical damage to be $380 million, the economic damage, $150 million. We're talking about dozens of civilians killed. But what gets lost in the number is the terror that millions of people in Gaza felt, you know, when you realize that no matter who you are, I mean, you had physicians that run internal medicine at prominent hospitals that were killed along with their family on a central road in Gaza. You had the most iconic towers struck down as a way of sending terror in the hearts of everybody. That, and I think the way Mahmoud put it, of the continuous trauma and the idea that you wake up every single day and you can't leave a 40 by 11 kilometer strip of land, and this has been a policy for 15 years, as part of a generalized policy that serves Israeli policy interests. That is a continuous cost borne on millions of people that the Israeli government imposes every single day.
Mahmoud,
can I add something?
Yeah, please go ahead, Mahmoud.
With regards to reconstruction, we are living in a prison, and that's true. So, for example, after the 2014 war, do you know how many years it took for Gaza to be rebuilt?
How many?
It took years. It took like three to 4 years. The reconstruction system was controlled by Israel. There was a vetting system on the people and who should actually get their homes rebuilt again.
Just to help our international audience, are you referencing the Gaza reconstruction mechanism, the plan by which...
Exactly. Yeah. And there's another aspect that I want to tell people about. There is the fact that every once in a while now, after the 11 days of assault on Gaza, you are actually talking about easing the restrictions, easing, you know, things going forward and improving. They are not. They are, you know, before the 11 days, things were bad. And what's happening now is that they are returning gradually to that state, which was already bad. So, for example, just before the 30th of August, for 3 months after the assault, there were no reconstruction materials allowed into Gaza. They were allowed only on the 30th of August for some international organizations.
Mahmoud, can I ask you something here? Because I'm going to show a couple of pictures that you shared with us. So this is your organization map. This is the only COVID lab that was in Gaza. So that has now disappeared. You also sent us these two pictures. Can you tell me what we're seeing right here and
This room, this room exactly, this one, is where I got my vaccine for COVID-19. This was a totally destroyed primary healthcare clinic in the north of Gaza. You know, as a result of the 11 days of assault, 10 hospitals were partially damaged. 22 primary healthcare clinics were partially damaged, but this one was totally damaged. It was no longer, you know, usable as a clinic. And this was the only COVID-19 vaccination center for the population of the north of Gaza. You're talking about more than a quarter of a million of people.
So the material, that you need to rebuild these facilities, they are sometimes classified of dual use by Israel. So if they feel that there's a use that Hamas might use and that civilians also need to use to rebuild, those materials cannot come into Gaza. So what does that mean for that space there and for the only COVID lab in Gaza, Mahmoud? What's the reality? When will they be rebuilt?
Who knows? This is a politically driven crisis. And if it's not resolved soon, then these places would remain as they are until, you know, a mechanism is found for rebuilding and reconstructing. And the list of dual use items goes beyond that, you know, Femi. If you are talking about IT equipment, routers, for example, or laptops, we have had zero IT equipment entering Gaza for 3 months, and they have just reallowed those again. For patients, for example, in the health sector, we use something called carbon fiber rods, you know, for the limb reconstruction, again, reconstructing humans. And those are light rods that are very beneficial for the legs of patients. Those are dual-use items. And we had to find an alternative that was heavier on the legs of patients. And the list goes on and on, affecting agriculture, reconstruction, health, and many of the other sectors. And I think, you know, there are many examples like that.
Can I add to that, please?
Please, Wafa, go ahead.
Yes, actually, two things. One, when Mahmoud said the attack on 2014, it took 3-4 years to rebuild Gaza. I don't agree. Gaza has not been built since 2008. Certain buildings were rising up, but I do know of cases that I followed of houses that were demolished and attacked, bombarded in 2008, and they haven't been built yet. And now we're talking about four attacks, and the houses are still, there is an increase of the destruction in Gaza. This is one thing. The other thing is actually a Rimal clinic that Mahmoud was talking about, and the photos that you showed. My office, my Gaza office, is actually in the opposite street. So we're facing this clinic. And the building where Filastiniyat office is located has been bombarded. It's a media organization, has been bombarded by the Israelis on the 17th of May, which caused the destruction and complete loss of all our equipment, our journalist working station. And as Mahmoud put it correctly, it's not only the siege doesn't only prevent materials like medical materials and equipment. Actually, we couldn't find laptops for our co-workers. We couldn't get lenses for the cameras. We couldn't find. It's also like the helmets and vests for journalists, they're not allowed. So we had to buy them from the West Bank, and it's been taking us 2 months to coordinate getting them into Gaza through a UN agency. Even the UN is unable to deliver to the office.
All right, Wafa Mahmoud and Omar, what I'm hearing are all the ways that Gaza is not being able to be rebuilt, like all the issues that is stopping reconstruction from happening. I want to bring in the voice of Israel's Defence Minister, Benny Gantz. There appears to be, and Omar, I'm going to play this video to you. You can respond and give me your genuine thoughts here. Some kind of deal that will ease the blockade, this is how I understand it, to allow vital material through, as Wafa was explaining. It's really hard to get the equipment in that you need to rebuild. This is what Defence Minister Gantz had to say. Let's have a look.
Militarily, we do not tolerate any intensification and are working vigorously against violations of Israeli sovereignty. And politically, we strengthen the ties with the Palestinian Authority and the moderate elements in the region while allowing the Palestinians in the Gaza Strip the basic humanitarian conditions required to maintain daily life, along with continued efforts to return prisoners and missing persons home. As part of this policy, we have also decided to change and improve Qatar's humanitarian aid delivery mechanism to the people of the Strip in order to make sure that the money goes to those who really need it. To this end, I have been in contact with Qatar officials who have understood the Israeli need, and I thank them for that.
I think Benny Gantz put it well, understand the Israeli need. The reality here is the only solution to rebuilding Gaza. It's not throwing dollars. The solution is to end the blockade, you know, and the closure. I mean, this is the same Benny Gantz that bragged during the Israeli elections in recent years of bombing Gaza back into the Stone Age. The reality is you're having 2 million people caged in an open air prison. And the Israeli government's policy is to punish, you know, thousands, tens of thousands of fishermen, you know, because of the actions maybe of a couple of people. And you're holding the entire population hostage. The reality here is whatever a deal is not going to get to the root cause. The root cause is not only, you know, the closure. When people talk about closure, they forget the 50-year occupation. They forget apartheid. These are all realities. There are layers and layers, and the goalposts keep changing. So it's no longer ending the occupation or ending the closure. It's easing the blockade. It's going back to an ugly status quo of apartheid. We need to get back to the core issue here. People deserve to live. People deserve to have the rights that they're entitled to under international law. And the first step is to permanently end the closure. International law does not permit these sorts of overarching, sweeping restrictions years on end on millions of people. It's not only illegal, it's not only immoral, but frankly, it's actually against the Israeli interest.
I want to bring in the voice of Omar. I have never seen a video commenter look so weary as he was making a suggestion for the way forward. You feel Omar's weariness in this clip that he sent to us just a few hours ago. Have a look.
There are many aspects related to the reconstruction of Gaza. One of them is how to get out of the cycle of war. Destruction, construction, destruction, and construction. Gaza has been under four wars since 2007 until May 2021. Thousands of families have lost their homes. So many factories were destroyed and infrastructure in a very bad situation. So the question is how to reach a longer term truce between the Gaza Authority and Israel.
So, Guess, I have a lot of YouTube questions for you. I'm going to ask you for instant reactions because we're at the very end of the show. Izara asks, Moff, I'm going to give this one to you. Why isn't the world holding Israel accountable? Gaza is locked in by land and sea and air. Why does the world accept double standards? Instant reaction, Wafa, go ahead.
I have no idea. I don't have the answer. If I had the answer, then I will understand all what Israel is doing to Gaza and doing to the Palestinians. And I don't understand, and we don't accept it. Why the world is silent? Because the world, I don't know. No, I don't have an answer.
Oh, yeah. If we had an answer, we wouldn't be doing this show. Dawas asks on YouTube, I'm going to give this one to you, Mahmoud. Foreign aid and support from other nations from the West needs to happen in order to help the population. Your instant reaction back to Dawas would be what?
Yes, but please make that unconditional and make that swift and don't discriminate between developmental and, you know, immediate relief. Focusing just on relief and forgetting sustainable development is something that we don't like. We should work in parallel at both sides and again make it unconditional and unpolitical because that's what Gaza needs right now.
And one more question. This one comes from Hasnan. I'm going to give this one to you, Omar. Does the international community have an agenda for rebuilding Gaza? I can only just pull on your past experience here. I know you can't read the minds of the entire international community. Quick thought before we wrap up.
I think absolutely the international community has failed to put the pressure necessary on the Israeli government to end apartheid and to end you know, the suffering of the Palestinian people for too many years.
Yep.
It's starting to change. It's not enough. We need action. We need consequences, accountability, and complicity with apartheid.
Thank you, Omar. Thank you, Wafa. Thank you, Mahmoud. And thank you, YouTube commenters, for being part of today's show. I'll see you next time. Take care, everybody.